Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'll do it later. That's the most common phrase in the lexicon of a person who is diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder or attention deficit disorder. And millions have been diagnosed with one or the other and some sort of learning disability. The combination can tap the confidence of the brightest among us and frustrate everyone around them. Back in the day, a daily dose of Ritalin was all the help available to most. Coming up, we'll meet the headmaster at Marburn Academy in Columbus, celebrating its 30th year teaching children with ADHD and or a learning disability. We'll also meet the parent advocate of a child with ADHD and hear about an organization to help parents help their children find success. Right now, we welcome Nancy Rady. She's a life coach who specializes in coaching adult professionals with ADHD. She's a prolific writer. She also lectures worldwide on the topic. She's been featured in the New York Times, Newsday, Wired, Vogue, and on ABC, CBS, and of course, NPR. Welcome to the show, Nancy.
Hi, welcome. Thank you so much.
I figure, you know, let's start with the people who fell through the cracks over the past several decades. There's people out there wandering around. No, they didn't have any screening processes in the schools. They didn't know what was wrong, and no one ever thought to question them except to say, why can't you ever make up your mind and why are you so lazy?
Exactly. Those are a lot of the people that end up showing up in my coaching practice because they've possibly their kids have gone in for diagnosis and then they relate to all the questions and the symptomology to that their kids have. Then that's when they step forward and say, oh my gosh, everything makes sense now.
But you focus on pretty successful professionals, so they've managed to succeed despite the odds or despite the challenges.
Exactly. But it's also their lives behind that veil or behind that screen. They're hiding a lot, and the because they've waited so long, or not waited, because there hasn't been the public awareness about the diagnosis, it's either been masquerading around as depression, and they've had all those years of character flaws. You know, you're consistently inconsistent. It's been seen as willful, and it's not a matter, this disorder is not a matter of not knowing what to do, but it's being able to apply those skills and that knowledge on a regular basis in order to create a habit of doing it, because it's a and other people on the show will be able to speak to it probably better than I can, but I see the symptomology play out on a daily basis in a practical way, and you're talking about a neurobiological disorder that causes the person to live in the present all the time, and what that does is you can't remember the consequences of the past and you forget your goal of the future. That could be in the next 5 minutes. It could be in the next 5 months or 5 years. So you continually repeat the same patterns of making yourself believe, oh, I can get all these other projects done and then I'll wait for the big bang project and do it over the weekend.
Because you've gotten them all done before? No, because you can't remember that you didn't get them all done before.
Right, because you convince yourself in that very moment that this time it's going to work.
My guest is Nancy Rady. She's a life coach who specializes in coaching adult professionals with ADHD. She's also the author of the book, The Disorganized Mind, Coaching Your ADHD Brain to Take Control of Your Time, Tasks, and Talents. Do you think you might have ADHD? We're not going to do an instantaneous diagnosis over the air, but if you have a question or comment about it as an adult, we welcome your call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go on to Facebook page. You can tweet at Ann Fisher, WOSU, whatever works for you. Coming up later, we'll hear from a parent. We'll also hear from an educator. So save your questions for parents and educators for later on in the show. Right now, we're talking about adults with ADHD. And Nancy Rady, life coach, is my guest. What can you, Nancy, talk a little bit about? Is this a neurological issue? Is this a behavior issue? Where does the problem come from?
Well, again, I work with people on how it plays out in their lives on a daily basis. And it's I would say, yes, it is a genetic neurobiological disorder. And a lot of the times it's whether you've, when you've been diagnosed, how much you know about it, a good diagnosis, and being involved in organizations like CHAD, going to getting the special help that you need, going to a school, getting appropriate learning, getting medication if that's what's needed. All of those things can affect whether the person's going to be successful or not. Now, I would say probably what gave me a leading edge is, even though I didn't have that label, or not the label, because I really don't see oftentimes labels as being bad, but if I didn't have the diagnosis, but I did have the opportunity to have a lot of experiential learning because I lived overseas. And also I had a father who saw that I really needed to be reined in. So I was brought up with that, with those templates in mind, that I knew that I needed structure.
You write about your dad in your book and how he used a stopwatch and that kind of thing, and did it with your brother too. I guess you had a sibling who struggled with some variation on the theme. All of you did. Okay, wow, he was a busy guy.
Yeah.
But how did he stop short of making you feel badly about yourself in the process of timing you and regimenting you and saying, Nancy, why can't you ever be on time?
Well, I think it took possibly three of the – I'm the youngest of three. And I, to this day, quite honestly, I have no idea why and how I am able to take criticism as an opportunity to improve upon something. I've driven bosses crazy and everything else, but someone will present me, and that's probably what makes me a strong coach, because I see some leak in the system, some mistake that someone's – quote-unquote mistake that someone's made, and I see it as an opportunity to – improve something. What my dad did is he would sit all of us down. Maybe the other siblings had issues with this, but I would find it very curious. And he would make us analyze and talk through every – what was it, Nancy, that got you from point A to point B in such a, you know, precarious path? How could someone possibly have gotten from point A to point – and I would have to analyze out and tell him, and sometimes it would be absurd, but I forgot what the question was. But but anyway, you know, those are the types of things that helped.
How he managed to critique you,
yes,
without bringing you down and making you feel badly about yourself, because that's a big problem in the dynamic of trying to help your kid, is doing it without bumming him out.
Well, he did it without judgment. He was curious,
right, without judgment,
as to how in the world a kid, you know, could screw up as much as what I could. Excuse my language.
That's okay. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Ore and Hilliard, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was just calling because I've never been diagnosed with ADHD, but that forgetfulness and living in the present, I struggle with it so much. I spend my life trying to get organized. I have read through every self-help book. I have done so much. I'm like a guru of getting organized, and I'm still a wreck.
So you're an expert on it, but you just still can't manage it.
I could tell everyone how to become organized. I could quote books, everything. But for me, I can't remember. I've set goals, and I'll completely forget that I set the goal like it never existed. And it drove my mother insane. It drives my husband crazy. He thinks, you know, it's on purpose.
So self-knowledge is a start, right, Nancy Rady?
Self-analogy, you said?
Self-knowledge.
Self-knowledge. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Absolutely. And I relate to you so much. And by the way, in my book, that type of behavior is called mistaking the setup for the actual task. So what you're doing is you're running around doing all these organizational setups, and it's making you feel as though you're doing work. Another word for that that a client of mine used was premature gratification. So,
is that what it is?
Yeah, so get my book and learn a couple strategies to help yourself with that issue.
I am definitely going to go out and get your book.
The name of the book is called The Disorganized Mind, Coaching Your ADHD Brain to Take Control of Your Time, Tasks, and Talents. Ore, what...
Yes.
What do you do to cope?
I try to stick to timelines. I try to give myself enough time to finish tasks, and I really have to focus hard to make sure that I stay within a time frame. Like, I use timers, and I have a giant calendar on my wall that takes that 2 months. It's a wipe-on, write-off, and I set my alarm on my cell phone a lot for different things to help me stay on task. I mean, it's the only way I'll remember to do things is I need that timer. I need something to click in my, you know, around me to warn me that, okay, Oray, you need to remember to do something.
Nancy?
Yes, and that is, I'm sitting across here, thumbs up saying, yes, absolutely. That's absolutely great, because what you're doing is training your brain to measure time. And a lot of people with ADD see time as liquid, and that's part of the problem. So what you're doing is you're giving yourself and your brain cues throughout the day to help signify that so much time has gone by. And you're also setting goals for each one of those quadrants. And not only that, but you're giving yourself time to pause, think, and reconsider. And that's also another thing that people with ADHD have a lot of problems with. That's the executive functioning part of our brain that isn't quite working up to par. And it makes us impulsive and forgetful and hyper-focus and get into all sorts of problems.
Thanks, Oray, for your call. We appreciate it. We have an email from Edward. He says, what common traits do you see in adults with ADD? Nancy?
Well, everybody's an individual, and the ADD displays in different ways in different people. But mostly I would say the adult group who I coach or that I coach, it's an awful lot of distractibility, forgetfulness, trying to break large projects up into small bite-sized projects. So there's usually some issues at work, some social issues, communication issues, trying to get life balance back in your life, which means developing daily routines, exercise, sleep. And then one of the biggest ones is actually in that kind of life balance venue is intimacy, couples and intimacy.
Okay. Thanks for that email. If you want to email us, go to allsides@wosu.org. You can call us at 614-292-8513, and you can go to talk to us on Facebook. We're talking about ADD and ADHD with author Nancy Rady. She is a life coach. She specializes in coaching adult professionals with ADHD. We'll be right back. We're going to meet an educator who specializes in ADHD and ADD issues. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and time is running out for you to make your 2011 contribution to our station. Our goal is to raise an additional $50,000 by December 31st. Pledge at WOSU.org/2011 or by phone at 866-897-9678. Your gift is tax deductible and supports the programming on 89.7 NPR News. Happy holidays and happy new year from WOSU Public Media. And thanks for your support.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
34 degrees with partly cloudy skies, a high of 38 today. Clouds tonight and a low of 27. Cloudy for tomorrow and a highs in the upper 30s. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're were talking about ADHD and ADD and throwing some dyslexia or some other learning disability for good measure. Still with us is Nancy Rady. She's a master certified coach by the International Coach Federation and a senior certified coach by the Institute for the Advancement for ADHD Coaching. She specializes in coaching adult professionals with ADHD. Thanks again, Nancy, for joining us today.
Thank you.
Joining us now is Earl Oremus.
Oremus.
Headmaster of Marburn Academy, the only accredited college preparatory school for students with ADHD and dyslexia in the Columbus area. Earl is a two-time past president of the Central Ohio branch of the International Dyslexia Association. He's currently board president of the National Learning Disabilities Network. He is also a founding member of the National Leadership Summit for Learning Disability Schools. So welcome to the show, Earl.
Thank you. It's a delight to be here.
Marburn's 30 years old?
Yes.
That's not that old, really. If you think about, you know, the whole timeline of the world, it's really, really been just 30 years ago that people started throwing much more at kids with attention deficit disorder or ADHD than, you know, a pillbox of Ritalin.
Right. I think in the 20s and 30s, when the early work was being done with dyslexia, Dr. Orton helped several schools get started in the New England area and along the eastern coast. And then World War II came along, and that really slowed down. And then in the 50s, a wave of private schools began to be formed around the country as educators came to understand that there actually were ways to teach dyslexic kids to read. And then I would say it's been more in the 70s and 80s that we've actually begun thinking about there are ways to teach ADHD kids the self-management skills that they don't come with. So we run a program every year at the International Dyslexia Association for the heads of these schools. And although there's no official database, we estimate that there may be about 300 schools like Marburn around the country that focus on these things. So we've really gotten to the place where we actually have some programs that really work for these children. It's wonderful to watch the results.
So 30 years ago, how did Marburn differ 30 years ago from what it is today?
Much less definition in terms of which kinds of kids it was going to work with. I think it was started by a group of parents who all had kids who weren't thriving in a traditional school. So it started out wanting to help every kid for whom school wasn't working very well. It's a great idea, but it doesn't work well in a school. You have to have real clarity between what your mission is, who you're really designed to work for, and then you have to really work hard at making sure that your techniques work well for those children. If you entertain the hope of serving too wide of a range, you never develop high levels of skill at how to help particular ones. So at Marburn in particular, we have focused for a long time on the children who don't learn to read, write, and spell. It's almost like the ADHD of reading. They're both neurologically based differences in the brain, and kids just come with wiring that doesn't make it easy to learn those skills. On the ADHD side, one of the things I say to parents when I do the seminars is, you know, have you ever seen a baby who wasn't totally ADHD? I mean, every child who comes into the world is totally impulsive, distractible, disorganized, and volatile. But living in a traditional family, if you have traditional wiring, by the time you're five and you go to kindergarten, you've learned how to delay gratification. You can take turns. You can not blurt out. You can raise your hand. You can stay in your seat. And yet another child who grew up in exactly the same home, same parents, same rules, same guidelines, gets to kindergarten and can't do any of those things. So the way we approach it is we think about the ADHD children as having neurology that doesn't allow them to intuitively learn those things at home in the first 5 years the way other kids do. Much like the dyslexic kid, we know a little more about the neurology on the dyslexia side, but a dyslexic kid lacks some of the wiring that makes it easy for good readers to pick up on the relationship between the symbols, the letters, and the sounds.
They call it breaking the code.
Complicated than that, but yeah. We don't want to talk about that now. But to resolve that issue for the dyslexic kid, you develop a way of teaching that actually builds the wiring. You're actually challenging the brain to get better in that area and build that wiring. And you teach the techniques that allow them to do it. And then you raise it to the level, as Nancy said, where you actually then internalize it and it becomes automatic. It's not just knowing, it's becoming fluent at it. On the ADHD side, when we started looking at how we were going to serve these children better, there were no good models. There were not school models we could go to. Even in the literature, there wasn't a model, say, organize your school this way. So we decided we would use the principles that had worked so well for dyslexic children. So I said, okay, let's look at as well as we can. Where are the neurological pieces that are missing? What is it that they seem not to get? How would we break that down and teach that technique overtly? And what kind of environment does it have to be for that kind of teaching to work? So over time, we evolved a program that actually works really well for ADHD kids. So they don't leave not being ADHD. I'm not saying that's true. I mean, dyslexic kids learn to read, but they're still dyslexic. But when they leave us, they leave knowing how to manage. They have learned self-management skills that they can apply. Not perfectly, not in every instance, but it makes a huge difference. It really does.
How important is it that you get the kids buy-in? I mean, once Nancy Rady sees one of her clients, they come to her. They're saying, hey, I got a problem. I admit I have a problem. But with children, it's different. They may not, A, understand what you're trying to tell them, and B, they may feel, sometimes can be ostracized and that sort of a thing.
Or they feel like you're saying that they're a defective human being, and almost anybody resents that and resists it. So your question is right to the point. It's critical to have an environment where the children feel totally understood, totally respected, and totally loved. And then they know that you're on their side. So one of the first things we had to do when we started trying to build a program that was really remedial or therapeutic for ADHD. So we had to invent a new behavior management system for the school. In most families and in most schools, if you do something you're not supposed to do and you do it repeatedly, the solution is punish you. And if that punishment doesn't work a couple of times, then punish you with a bigger punishment. We call it two warnings and a bop. And, if the bop doesn't work, bigger bop. Well, think about a poor impulsive child who wants to do the right thing, but neurologically they act before they think. So if they're in a two warnings and a bop punishment system, they're always going to act first and then go, oh my gosh, I just did it again. And then, of course, the bops get bigger as you go along. So we had to come up with a behavior management system that you can't do without consequences. So you can't just take the consequences and throw them off the table. If you have no consequences, you're sort of implicitly telling the child that the world is okay with this behavior and you don't want that message. But you can't have the consequences be the kind of thing you use in the traditional behavior management system. You can't administer the consequences with frustration or anger or being upset. We often feel in the traditional system that if we ask a child or someone else to do something three or four times and they don't do it, that we're entitled to be angry at them about it. And we show that in our tone of voice and that kind of thing. That counterproductive totally with these children. So what you have to do is you need a system where the consequence is used as a symbol that this wasn't the way it needs to be, but you don't expect the consequence to behave to change the behavior. Our little mantra is you cannot consequence an ADHD kid into having different neurology. What you must do is teach in a patient and effective way to help them build the neurology, which is what Nancy does with her adults. So that your question to the environment is critical. They have to know. I said one of the very first principles that we learned is these children can be frustrating because they do the same thing wrong every darn time, sometimes year after year.
Why don't they ever learn?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you just feel like, punishment is what is needed. What you have to believe is that it is, and Nancy used this term earlier, it's not willful. It's not intentional. The traditional behavior management system is built on the assumption that behavior is intentional. And this system is not. And so you start out with everybody in the school has to have an unshakable conviction that this child has a deep desire to, quote, be good, to do what is right, to learn how to do things well. They want to earn your respect. They want to be successful. So if you start with that belief, then no matter how much evidence you get that they do the same thing wrong all the time, you never change your notion. You know that in their heart, they're desperate to be good. That means you don't have to be angry and frustrated with them. You can actually be sort of sorry along with them, sad. You say, when parents administer a consequence and a kid is really frustrated, it's almost always, I just told you not to do that, so therefore, boom. In our system, you would say, you know, I am so sorry. We worked very hard to give you a couple of cues here. It didn't work, but that's okay. You know, we've agreed this is the consequence when this happens. So, yeah, you're going to get the consequence. But let's talk about what we can do next time to give you a better cue or to help you be better able to implement your tactic.
My guest is Earl Oremus. He is headmaster of Marburn Academy. It's the only accredited college preparatory school for students with ADHD and dyslexia in the Columbus area. If you have a question or comment for him, give us a call. Also with us, Nancy Rady. She's a life coach. She specializes in coaching adult professionals with ADHD. I want to get to some calls, and we have emails, so hang in there with us. Andrew and Bexley, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi, Andrew.
How are you today?
Very well.
Good. Great discussion and good people out there helping folks out. My wife was a school teacher for 40 years, and she claims that I was SLD. So that's just a thing. But
what is SLD?
Severe learning disability.
Okay.
She also said I can't hear her very well. I have a grandson that is diagnosed as ADHD, and his father was diagnosed as ADHD. And two questions. I was just wondering, is it necessarily inherited from a parent to child? And number two, has any research been as far as hypnosis? I know that smokers can be hypnotized, drinkers can be hypnotized, and I'm just wondering if hypnotics might be another source or whatever to control the child and direct them.
Well, Earl, what do you say? Is it something that's been considered hypnosis at Marburn before?
No, we haven't. I'm going to back up to the first question, which is the genetic element. And there's a very, very strong genetic element. I believe it's about 85% of dyslexic people have a dyslexic.
And ADHD too?
ADHD, yeah. In terms of hypnosis, that's not something I've read about. It's not something I'm aware of. It's a very interesting question. It's something that I'd love to hear about if anybody has any literature.
Well,
on
it
that.
Goes to the whole idea of brain elasticity and the idea that you can change the brain, doesn't it? I mean, ultimately, different people will respond to different things.
Right. And that's what teaching is, obviously. I mean, really, anytime anybody learns something new, what they've actually done is they've done some rewiring in some of their neural networks. They've built stronger synapses and more. They've recruited new neurons to the network. So learning really is changing the brain. And we all come wired up to learn some things quite easily, which means we arrive with great wiring in that area. And then we all come wired up where some things are very hard to learn, and we have to do a much bigger job of doing the rewiring there. So we look at an ADHD kid, you're looking at building a very big building project when it comes to the wiring.
And by the time they get to you, Nancy, if they haven't been diagnosed before or treated before, you're talking a bit about a big renovation project. You can't really rebuild, or can you, at the adult level? And is hypnosis ever?
Well, before we go on any further, I just wanted to say that there are some resources out there that can give answers to some of these questions in terms of alternative treatment and research and all that kind of stuff. And there's the CHAD website, www.chadd.org, and then whatever the
Marburn Academy.
We'll post those.
The Learning Disabled, the LD websites where they can give information about the science of all of this. And yes, by the time that people come to me, their habits are pretty ingrained. Their quote unquote compensatory strategies are pretty ingrained, and that is a huge component of what I work on. And if you can get people to understand what it is, I call it the method behind their madness, what it is that they're struggling with. Is it procrastination, or that they're lazy? Again, that's kind of the label or the character judgment. Or is it that they're actually having difficulties with transition? So naming it, being aware of it, being willing to work on it, whatever the problem is, and then stepping away from it, developing the strategies, and then being very vigilant and remembering that this is a lifelong challenge. But my message out there is that for the parents and for anyone struggling with it, there is hope. It takes work, just like the first caller said. You know.
Thank you, Andrew. And Earl?
I want to add one thing about the non-traditional strategies. If you're thinking about the kind of rewiring that's required to build new neural networks, that's long, hard work. And almost anything that promises a quick fix is not likely to be accurate. So I would say parents should be careful about that when they're looking at alternative strategies. And I know why they do. I mean, many times children are in a school where the school is not responsive to their needs and the parents get desperate. Things get tough at home, lots of battles about homework and worries about the kid failing. And they get to the place where they're grasping at straws, trying anything. But anything that promises, you know, just the quick fix, it's really unlikely to be there.
And I just wanted to add, I just wanted that very, very quickly, that there have been probably out of the 20 years of my practice coaching, probably three adults who've ever come to me who have not been on the medication first before they've actually gotten around to calling me. I kind of said that sentence backwards, but it takes them being on the medication in order to get it together to call me. And there was also some research done recently, and you can go to the EDGE Foundation. I'll give you the information about this, that that coaching actually is being seen as a viable leg for the treatment for ADHD. I am absolutely not saying that that does not preclude a good diagnosis and also possibly medication in order for the person to be able to focus long enough or to get the neurons working up there in the executive functioning in order to practice the skills. And part of the whole goal, I think, for all of us is helping the child, the adult, or whoever self-initiate change, and that means self-observation, self-talk, pausing.
Mary in Upper Arlington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Mary.
Hi, thank you. My son has been diagnosed with ADHD, and through this process, I've identified, I haven't been diagnosed myself, but I certainly identify with a lot of the information that you're giving here. So my question is, I've been spending my time and sort of spinning my wheels trying to treat him. What would be your recommendation on, do you treat the child first or did you treat the parent first? What would be your recommendation, please?
Good question, Mary. Earl?
I would start with the child, but it's important to do education for parents too, because particularly if a youngster is struggling at school, that struggle almost always migrates to the home. When the school can't find a way to get – they know the child is smart. And when they can't find a way to get the child to get the work done on time or to get it done up to standard, when they sort of run out of resources there, they wind up moving that struggle into the home. They hand it off to the parents and they say, you know, we know this kid is bright. You've got to get him to do his work, because if he doesn't, he's going to fail. And then what happens is that a child like this who's going to struggle in school – if there's one thing they need, it's a loving, supportive, understanding situation at home. But when that situation gets turned into a two-hour bitter battle about homework every night, all the support is gone for the child. And so we argue very, very strongly that parents must understand what's different. Most cases, if there's a lot of struggle at home, they need to learn a different way to respond. And we actually run seminars for parents on that. We have them coming up in October, November, where they're for any parent in the community, and it's free. And we teach them what's different about the way you can understand your child that will let you change what you do, and what's different about how you can respond. Then, of course, in school, it helps if some of the people in school are understanding and supportive of it, too. We have the option of getting kids diagnosed and getting them on a 504 plan or even an IEP sometimes in the public schools. But mostly those systems try to accommodate the difficulty. They don't try to remediate it. So a kid could get service there and get some help staying afloat, but not necessarily the kind of help that Nancy talks about or that we talk about in kind of making the child independent with their own self-management skills.
Mary, thanks for your call. Hang in there. We're going to take another break. My guests, Nancy Rady, life coach, specializes in coaching adult professionals with ADHD. Earl Oremus, he's headmaster of Marburn Academy. And coming up, a parent. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Hey, did you hear Car Talk last week?
She looks over and sees me breaking out in hot sweats whenever she's getting close to 50 miles an hour.
Yeah. Well, you're going to have to take over. Because okay. If anything ever goes wrong with it, she'll never hear the end of it.
That's right.
Right? So if you wanted to tell her, look, hon, what's the current wife's name, or are you numbering them?
Don't miss the fun this week.
Join us for Car Talk.
Car Talk Saturday at noon on 89.7 NPR News. And in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, All Sides Weekend begins with a discussion of enjoying the outdoors this winter around Ohio. On the All Sides Weekend panel, John Ross with Columbus Alive, Gene Bax with the Ohio State Parks, and Dispatch travel writer Steve Stevens. Join us for All Sides Weekend from 11 till noon on 89.7 NPR News. Many Happy Returns to Lazarus commemorates the store on High Street that opened in 1851 and has a place in the heart of generations of Central Ohioans. Take a trip down memory lane, Sunday evening at 7, on WOSU-TV. 34 degrees in downtown Columbus, mostly cloudy skies today, a high of 38, partly cloudy tonight, a low of 28 degrees, and partly cloudy tomorrow with a high of 39. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're talking about ADHD, ADD, learning disabilities, that sort of thing. It's a 30-year anniversary of Marburn Academy, and joining us today is Earl Oremus. He's headmaster of Marburn Academy. It's the only accredited college preparatory school for students with ADHD and dyslexia in the Columbus area. Still with us as well, Nancy Rady. She's a life coach. She specializes in coaching professionals with ADHD. She's also the author of The Disorganized Mind, Coaching Your ADHD Brain to Take Control of Your Time, Tasks, and Talents. Joining us now is Kelly Schmidt. Kelly is a member of Columbus Children and Adults with Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. She also has a 9-year-old son with ADHD, mood disorder, and sensory processing disorder. Welcome to the show, Kelly.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
I wanted to go back to what Mary from Upper Arlington was asking about, who to treat first. It's sort of like when you're on the airplane and they say, if the person next to you is struggling with their oxygen mask, take care of yourself first and then help them. Is there any validity to that? I mean, should you wait and do one or the other?
Oh, absolutely. I think co-treating could be really beneficial to the whole family because the dynamics between a parent with some ADHD symptomology and a child with ADHD symptomology, that could be really, really challenging for the whole family. And there's certainly many people in the Columbus area, professionals who are qualified to diagnose and treat adults with ADHD. So Mary, maybe you would want to talk to your family doctor first to get some guidance on perhaps they can make recommendations for people to evaluate your situation and potentially seek out treatment. At CHAD, we don't specifically endorse any practitioners or methodology or treatment, but we do provide resources and information.
How important is CHAD to the sanity of a lot of parents? A lot of parents go solo it. They don't aren't involved in the organization, but what do you do at CHAD that helps?
Well, every month from May through September, we offer informational session to both parents of children who have ADHD as well as adults with ADHD. So we have separate speakers for both groups on topics of interest to both of those groups. And we meet for about an hour with those presentations. And then for the second hour, we break into support group meetings. So For example, we have parents of children of elementary age students meet together, and then parents of children who are in middle school to high school meet together and really just kind of share stories, share information, share struggles. And that's really been beneficial to realize that you're not the only one who is dealing with these challenges.
I want to stick a word in here and say that I think CHED is one of the most fantastic resources you could have. It's nationally, it's one of the most prominent advocacy organizations. And the work they do to help parents get connected with people who can help them and to talk with one another and not feel so lonely and isolated or hopeless, that is crucial. I mean, when the parents feel defeated, there's no hope for the kid. And CHED is just fantastic at helping with that.
We're talking about ADHD and ADD. Kelly Schmidt, she's a member of Columbus Children and Adults with Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. Also, Ed Oremus, he's headmaster of Marburn Academy. And also with us, Nancy Rady, a life coach. She specializes in coaching adult professionals with ADHD. If you have a question or comment for them, you can email us, as did Tim from Columbus. He says, if you are an adult and you suspect you have ADHD, what is the process of getting a diagnosis? At what point is medication considered? Nancy Rady, you want to take a stab at that? What do you tell people to do first? Get diagnosed?
Well, most people do come to me already with a diagnosis. And I think for an adult, it's extremely important for them to see a psychiatrist and to seek out a psychiatrist who is well-versed in treating people with ADHD. Then after that, well, first of all, I think the person should try to educate themselves as much as possible to see if it is ADHD, and resources like CHAD and the National Center for Disease Control, right, the CDC, and it's – we'll provide all these things at the end of the show – and get a diagnosis. Possibly go on a trial of medication to see if that works, and then maybe work with a coach, maybe try therapy, psychotherapy, because often for an adult there's years of, psychological torment. can be. So, but it certainly can be a struggle, you know, so.
Whenever, and I imagine, Kelly Schmidt, you've had this experience when you say my kid has ADD or ADHD and someone says, is it a boy? Oh, boys are always diagnosed with ADD if they're lively and they're just typical and it's being overdiagnosed. And aren't you concerned about your kid being misdiagnosed because it's so overdiagnosed? What do we know about this feeling that a lot of people have that ADHD is just a new it's being overdiagnosed.
Yeah, people do have that perception that it's sort of the diagnosis du jour, and that people are just handing out Ritalin left and right. I think the most discouraging thing is the naysayers, the people who say that it's not a real disorder, and that's where it gets frustrating, is when people don't believe that such a thing exists.
Are you worried, Earl, that some kids are missed, that it is an overdiagnosis? Is that something that concerns you? Do you feel like the screening processes are sophisticated enough now that they're catching them?
I do, and I don't think there's any doubt that there does seem to be an increase in the diagnosis, and there's a lot of talk in the science community about whether there are environmental factors or other things that could be affecting that. I see a sort of a self-selected population, because the people who come to our school have already come to terms with the fact that the conventional system isn't going to work for the child, so they've got there's no question about it that the children we see who are ADHD are kids for whom school just isn't going to work unless they learn how to handle it better. The role of medication is, from our point of view, it's kind of a support role. It doesn't solve the problem. When children really struggle at school, they often get pretty angry about how they're being treated at school, or they feel hopeless and guilty about it, either one. And so neither of those feelings is the kind of thing that gets a person ready to do hard learning work about rewiring the brain. Our sense is that the medication, when it works well for our kids, basically what it does is it makes them available for teaching. It spreads out the distance between the times when there is a problem that really occurs. And so you get more time in the middle to work successfully with a child and have them experience success and to give them praise and to and over time, a certain percentage of the kids that we work with develop enough self-management tactics that they actually feel successful and give up medication. Not all. I've had any number of kids tell me, and I always think about this when I hear the people say, it's a phony diagnosis and it's a conspiracy with the drug companies. I had so many kids tell me, you know, I don't like taking this medicine. I'd stop it in a minute, but I know darn well that I'm not going to build a record that's going to get me into the college I want to go to if I don't have this help. And so I really don't see, in my experience, that the issue of kids taking it for a lark or for recreation, and I don't see parents administering it. I see the opposite. Parents are often extremely reluctant to get to the place to administer it. And
Nancy Rady?
Yeah, I just wanted to say something very quickly, and that is with the adults that I see and in my own experience, there's, again, now there hasn't been the sense of awareness back when I was diagnosed, which was already 25, almost 30 years ago, that there is now, in particular about ADHD, but there was an awful lot of misdiagnoses, and I still see that today because I work with these adults who have been misdiagnosed. So for every child who maybe someone feels is being overdiagnosed, I see maybe three or four adults who have been misdiagnosed.
You mean they didn't get diagnosed at all?
Who have been diagnosed as something else.
Oh.
You know, and again, what is it that comes first, the chicken or the egg, the depression or the ADHD? With that said, I want to kind of stop and segue into something else, and that is I look back at my own childhood and think, were I to have been brought up in the United States and you know, my whole childhood, and had I not been diagnosed so early at Ohio State, where I did my undergraduate work, which was, they were way, way ahead of the time, then I think medication, I would probably be in jail. I mean, quite frankly, I have no idea, you know, because there was a lot of self-medicating back in my time. And if I could have taken a pill, because I was a good responder, if I could have taken a pill, I would not have all those holes in learning, in the learning that I had. And thank God I was overseas. Thank God I was diagnosed early as being dyslexic. But I would have given anything to have had the chance to have had medication early. So,
Bernadette, you're in Columbus. You have ADHD. You've been diagnosed?
I wasn't diagnosed. I diagnosed myself, actually, here in a library in Columbus. I spent a lot of time researching ADD and ADHD when my son was a kindergartner. He's grown up now, but when he was little. And I realized everything that I was reading was me. So I basically diagnosed myself. So my question this morning is, why do we hyper-focus with, you know, people with ADHD, we tend to hyper-focus.
Well, define hyper-focus. What do you mean by it? Is it because I'm a doodler? Is that what you mean?
For example, if I do finally start a project that has maybe been in the back burner for a month, a week, 2 years, depending on the time, I let it go. Procrastination, of course. But if I do start the project and I basically can't get away from it, I want to just stay on it and can't get away from it then.
Okay. Nancy Rady?
Well, I'll take a stab at that. Okay. I can tell you the strategies that people use in order to help break them of that habit, and then also how it is that I work with people in order to help them discover what it is. But basically what's happening is, because it's taken you so long to start that project, once you start it, there's probably, at least this is what happens with myself and my clients, there's probably that sense of, oh my gosh, I have my teeth sunk in this project, and now it, you know, because it's taken me so long and I've had so much angst, I need to absolutely keep my teeth in it and just keep chewing away on it because I'm afraid that it's going to take me another 10 years to get up the will or the desire to start it. It also sounds like you probably have some problems with transitions. But what's happening in the brain is an ADD actually should probably be called an attention variability disorder because a lot of people think, oh, just because you aren't running around doing a see-do type of a thing, and that's the type of person I am. I see something, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, the weeds need to be, oh, the dog walks by, I need to trim the dog's paws, you know, or I mean the dog's claws or whatever. I'm a see-do person, so I move around a lot. Then there's the person who is sitting there and their brain is going a mile a minute. So that's where you get, you know, someone who hyperfocuses and doesn't and that, all that. But what is happening is if you don't have the executive functioning part of your brain working, and that's why they give you stimulants, which means you don't have enough kind of the gas or RAM up to the top of your brain, which allows us to self-modulate and self-inhibit, you're going to be sitting there for hours at the expense of going to the bathroom, picking up your kids, eating, sleeping, and everything else because we don't have that part of our brain telling us, hello, 5 hours have stopped by. This is not normal.
I want to thank our guests. I'm sorry to all the callers and the emailers that we didn't get to. I suppose we ought to talk about this again sometime. In the meantime, happy anniversary to Marburn Academy.
Thank you so
30
much.
30 years. Earl Oremus, thanks for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure, and it's wonderful to get this information out. There are so many people out there who need it.
It's Earl Oremus. He's headmaster of Marburn Academy, the only accredited college preparatory school for students with ADHD and dyslexia. You can learn more about it. We'll have a link on our website at WOSU.org. Also, Kelly Schmidt. She's a member of the Columbus Children and Adults with Attention Deficit and Hyperactivity Disorder. Kelly, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And also, Nancy Rady. Thanks for joining us today, Nancy.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Nancy is the author of The Disorganized Mind, Coaching Your ADHD Brain to take Control of Your Time, Tasks and Talents. And thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.